Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. A'udhu billahi minash shaitani rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alamin. Alhamdulillahi alladhi hadana li hadha wa ma kunna linahtadiya lawla an hadana Allah. Was salatu was salam ala ashrafil anbiya wa sayyidil mursalin wa shafiil muthnibin sayyidina wa nabiyyina Abil Qasim Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. والصلاة والسلام على أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المظلومين المنتجبين لا سيما مولانا وسيدي صاحب الأصل والزمان روحي وأرواح العالمين له الفداء وأجل الله تعالى فرجه الشريف ولعنة دائمة على أعدائهم ومنكر فضائلهم من الآن إلى قيام يوم الدين أما بعد رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي أمري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقه قولي. For the hastening of the return of our 12th Imam, whose birth anniversary we are marking this evening, one salawat upon Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. Indeed, this evening it's a very great celebration that we have gathered together to commemorate. It's the birth not only of our Imam, the 12th Imam, the Imam of our time, but actually when you trace the lineage back and you trace the goal of why Allah sent the Prophet and the Imams, ultimately the goal of our 12th Imam becomes the fulfillment of the message of the 124,000 Prophets that preceded him. And so tonight, as we mark this celebration, we offer our congratulations to the brothers and sisters who are here tonight. We offer our congratulations to the Ummah of Islam, to our Maraja Taqleed, and to each and every one of the Prophets that Allah has sent for the guidance of humanity, from Adam to Khatam, as we celebrate the birth of the Savior of humanity, the guide to salvation, Imam al-Mahdi, ajalallahu ta'ala farajahu sharif. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. And I'm going to be very brief tonight, and I mean that for a fact, because I want to try to use an app called Kahoot, which you've all been asked to download. So we're going to have a quiz at the end of the session. Unfortunately, I didn't bring any prizes with me this time. But we will have food for those who answer correctly at the end. So if you didn't answer correct, there's no tabarakat for you tonight. So that'll be the prize for tonight. But inshallah, next time, if we get more into the usage of this app and everybody has your smartphones or tablets, next time we will have prizes available for the people who participate and obviously get correct answers. So today, as we mark this birth anniversary of our 12th Imam, obviously, there's a lot of ways that we can understand the life of the Imam. And he's unique in the sense that because he's been in this period of occultation, right? It's not like our other Imams. It's not like the 124,000 Prophets that Allah had sent, right? When those Prophets were there, you and I, if we were living at that time, we could easily walk to the house of a Prophet, meet the Prophet, speak to him, ask him questions, get guidance. It was a very normal life that those early people had. Even the time of our first 11 Imams, people had direct connection to their Imam. They could go to the house of Imam Ali. They could go to the fifth Imam, go to the ninth Imam. They could interact with their Imam. But we obviously live in a unique circumstance where, out of Allah's infinite wisdom, and we have hadith why the ghaib had happened, but out of the wisdom of Allah, I can sum it up as Allah wanted things to happen in this particular way. You know, sometimes we get bogged down. Why is the Imam not here? And we would all love that, I'm sure. Why can't we meet the Imam? You know, why don't I have an address I can go to? And that would be great to have. But one thing I always remember and remind myself is that when I look at the history of Islam, from the time of Rasulullah to all of the first 11 Imams, simply having an Imam or a Ma'asum in our midst, it never guaranteed that that person would stay on the right path. And I think we can all agree with that. I mean, the Quran, although many of the companions of Rasulullah were the greatest of companions, but at the same time, Allah revealed Surah Munafiqun, a chapter about people who are not dedicated to Rasulullah. And we all know the story of Karbala. 30,000 people write to Imam Hussein. And when the push comes to shove, we know what happened. So in one way, when we look at the ghaibah of our Imam, him being away from us, we look at it as a tragedy that we don't have connection. But look at it in the positive side, right? There's a silver cloud, there's a silver lining on every dark cloud. That the imam not being here for you and I is a blessing in disguise. Because it gives you and I an opportunity to work on ourselves. It gives us an opportunity to read the history of the Prophet, the Imams, what happened in that 250-year span, to see where they were falling short of their responsibility, and for us to wake up and say, well, they did this, this, and this wrong. Let's not fall into that same category. So yes, the occultation of the Imam is a tragedy that Allah had to keep his representative hidden for these last 12 centuries, and who knows how long it will continue. But let's look at it on the positive side, that we are now given another day to change ourselves, to make ourselves better, to be ready. So just as these young men were reciting in this poem, when they said, Labbaik ya Imam, that here I am, O Imam, that when that call comes from Imam al-Mahdi, we've had all of this time to prepare ourselves, prepare our children like these two young boys, and all of the children of our community, that when the Imam comes, we and our children and our families can make the call to that Imam and to respond to him and not follow as those who called the Imam to Karbala or to Kufa rather, and were not there to support the Imam. So let's take the occultation of the Imam in a positive light and realize that it's a greater time for you and I to change ourselves if we need that rectification. Salu ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. The hadith I want to begin with that we see on the screen is a very famous tradition. This is a statement attributed to Rasulullah that every Muslim, Shia or Sunni alike, we all accept this narration. And it speaks volumes of the way that Islam looks at the guidance and leadership of the community, that it's not only about prophets. In the hadith, as you can see, the Messenger of Allah says, "Man mata wa lam ya'rif imam al-zamanihi, mata mitatan jahiliya." A Muslim, a person who were to die and did not know the Imam of their time. Right. He doesn't say, the Prophet didn't say, you don't know the Prophet of your time, because there's a difference between a Prophet and Imam. And I don't want to go into theology of that, but there is a stark difference. But Rasulullah says, if you die and you don't know the Imam of your time, it's as if you've died in the pre-Islamic era of Jahiliyyah, meaning that you did not follow a religion that God had revealed to humanity. Now this becomes obviously a very important tradition, because in every era, every Muslim is obliged to know who their Imam is. You could say at the time of the first Imam, people accepted his imamate. And as the Imams went through, and obviously there are differences in terms of the Muslims of who is an Imam and who isn't. But when we come to the followers of Ahlul Bayt, we see that even there were a divergence of opinions. Who is the Imam of the time? I don't want to go again into that discussion. I just want to accept, and maybe, you know, just accept the fact that we all follow 12 Imams, and that we accept each of their imamat, their legacy, and what they've left behind. The Prophet of Allah tells us that we need to not just know the Imam, because the word the Prophet used is not ilm. There's a difference in the semantics between knowledge and what we call ma'rifat. Ilm, to know something, is, you know, today you go onto the internet and you have a problem, you'll Google it, you'll ask Google the answer, so you know the answer, you have knowledge of a particular topic. I might know certain things, I might know the facts and figures about anything that I can Google, but Islam doesn't look at ma'rifat as the same as knowledge. So what is the difference? Why did Allah's Messenger not say that you should only have knowledge of the Imam? To have knowledge of the Imam would know, okay, I know he was born in a particular country. I know he was born in a certain date. His name of his father was whatever. I won't give you the name because that's a question in the quiz today, so I won't tell you the name of the Imam's father. Hopefully you know it. But to know these things, the incidental characteristics, as we say, Anybody can know these. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. So anybody can know facts and figures, but the Prophet of Allah didn't say to know the figures and facts of the Imam. He said have a ma'rifat, have a deep recognition. And what that means for you and I as the followers of the 12 Imams is that we need to go past that superficial knowledge. We need to know specifics about imamate. How do we define an imam? And this is something we've been talking about in our Tuesday night sessions. For those who have been available to attend, or if you're watching online, you realize that knowing the imam, having the ma'rifat, means to know qualities about an imam. Because today, unfortunately, people claim a lot of things. Right? People even have claimed in our day and age to be the imam of the time. So today, if somebody were to stand up and say, "I am Imam Mahdi," how would we know that that person is truthful or a liar? Right? Let's say he tells you, "I know my father's name, my mother's name, where I was born." He knows all the facts and figures. How would we know that he's not the imam? So ma'rifat of the imam is a higher level where we begin to know the qualities of an imam, know the characteristics. And also, as we've been looking at on Tuesday night, what are the things that we expect to happen before the imam makes that return? That's a huge topic. Obviously, I don't want to go into it tonight. I want to look at just one very brief topic in the next few minutes about this concept of intidhar. Intidhar is what we are in today. We're in a state of waiting. Right? We know that the imam was born. We know that he went into a minor occultation for a period of 69 years. We then know that he went into a major occultation, which has lasted from that period till today, until Allah allows him to come out of that period. And the scholars, based on the hadith, so this is a direct quote from the hadith, we're told that we are in a period of intidhar. And so when Rasulullah, when our Prophet would tell the community what the best of actions is in the latter day, in Akhir al-Zaman, he would say, "Afdalul a'mal al-intidharul faraj." The best of actions is to await the return. Or faraj literally means await the relief from difficulties. And so the Prophet of Allah told us that the best of actions that we could do, the best of ways that we could lead our lives in the latter day, is to await the return, await the relief from the difficulties. And so intidhar has become a trait of the believer. It becomes a way that we lead our lives. It becomes a way that we organize all of our activities. It becomes a way that we plan and prepare for the future. But a question comes forth, and this is something which our imams were asked multiple times after the time of Rasulullah, when our first 11 imams would be gearing up the community for an imam that would go into ghaybat, into occultation, that would be away from the site. People were asking, what does it mean to wait? Right? Now all of us are here waiting for food, maybe. Maybe we're waiting for food. I don't know what we're waiting for. Maybe we're waiting for food. Maybe we're waiting for a lot of different things. But what, you know, when it came to the imam and that relief from difficulty, people would ask the imams of Ahlul Bayt, what do you mean by waiting? Because there are a lot of definitions of waiting. You know, if you go to your doctor's office, they'll say, take a number and have a seat. And what do? You wait. You can't do anything. You're just sitting there flipping through your emails or reading the magazines or just waiting, passing time, waiting for the doctor to call you. You can't do anything. You can't cure your condition. Right? You can't make yourself better before the doctor comes, so you're waiting. That's what we call passive. We're just sitting around waiting for something to happen. Right? We're waiting for the doctor to come. We're waiting for the bus to get, you know, so we can get to work or get to school. But we can't do anything to change that situation. But then you have active waiting, where you're doing something, where you're actively involved in trying to get things ready. Right? You invite somebody to your house for dinner. You're going to make sure the food is cooked. You may have had the children help you set the table. You'll have everything ready at home, so when your guest comes in, they're not busy setting the table for you. They're not going in the kitchen and cutting the onions and peeling the potatoes. They come in, they sit down, they talk, they enjoy the meal, and we get on with life. When imams were asked, what do you mean that the Shia should be waiting for the imam? They said that that is the way, this act of waiting. Now it's true that you and I cannot do anything to speed up the return of the imam. Yes, we hear the hadith that there will be 313, that magical number of 313, of the soldiers of the imam, which incidentally 50 of those are women. So 313 are the group, 50 of those are women. So they have a role in the revolution of the imam. They will be active, so that our women, our ladies, our mothers need to be active today in our community. They have to be leading the community, teaching. They have to be in positions of, dare I say, leadership maybe even. They have to be active in all aspects of our community, of our society, because if the imam wants them to be on board, they're not just going to be sitting around and, you know, making the chai while we're out to war. They're going to be doing something. And they have to be actively waiting the imam as well. So when the imam spoke of actively awaiting, we can't speed the return up, although some hadith may point to that. But actively waiting the imam means that we prepare ourselves first and foremost. Right? It's always about us as individuals. Allah says in the Quran so many times, O you who believe, alaykum anfusakum, take care of yourselves, worry about yourselves, both at the physical level and the spiritual level. Prepare ourselves physically and emotionally. Be a community ready to help and accept the imam. You know, last night or maybe even today, people were receiving all these messages on WhatsApp about Masjid Jamkaran, and maybe you saw the videos of what was happening in Qom last night on the birth of the imam. And subhanAllah, to see that video in Masjid Jamkaran, there must have been 100,000, 200,000 people in the masjid on the outside celebrating the imam. Fireworks were going off and there was a celebration, because this is what it's about. You know, we take Islam sometimes to be a very serious religion, right? It's very stern. We don't have fun. We don't enjoy. But these events, you know, like the birth of the imam, really, if you look at it, for Christians, when they celebrate the birth of Jesus with lights and celebrations, our centers, our communities should be like that on the day of the 15th of Sha'aban. It's no less important. And in fact, Prophet Jesus will be there to help our imam. So we should make these events joyful for our community. We should make them to be events where our children realize the importance of this particular event. But to see those people gathered in the masjid, that was just one example. And I know our communities are here tonight. May Allah reward you for being out here tonight. But we have to be in that state of anticipating and preparing ourselves for the imam. And as little as, you know, as we think that this gathering might be meaningless, but rest assured, and I'll share you a hadith with us tonight, that these majalis are a preparing ground for the imam. These are not just gatherings that we come, we sit, we eat, we have chai, we talk, we leave. Yes, that's a great part of it. But just gathering together tonight shows the imam that we are ready, right? If we can come home on a Friday night, we've been tired from working all day, we've been at school, we've been busy all day, and to leave the comfort of our home to be here is one indication that we have love for the imam. And may Allah, you know, give all of you this ability and strength to continue to attend the majalis, because indeed this is something that the Ahlul Bayt have a great love for. Salwa ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. So the goal is actively waiting, preparing ourselves, seeing what does the imam want from you and I, men, women, boys and girls, young and old. It makes no difference. You know, some people say, well, I'm 60, 70 years old. I've been waiting 70 years. The imam hasn't come. I'm going to be in my grave before he comes. But you know what? It doesn't matter. Because, and why do I say it doesn't matter? Because the hadith tell us, if you have that love for the imam, if you love the imam so much that you wanted to be with him, the hadith says that if you were to die, and the imam was to come 200 years from now, Allah would yet raise you up from your grave to be with the imam. So subhanAllah, it doesn't make a difference whether we're young or old. If we're not going to live to see the imam, if we have that love in our heart, that, ya Allah, I want to be there with the imam, I can't live that long, just that intention is enough. Allah will bring us back to life. As we see in the dua that many of us recite every morning, the dua of Ahad, the promise, the supplication of the promise, there's a beautiful line where we say that, O Allah, if death were to occur between me and the time of the imam, a death which you have preordained and you have foretold, the dua says, so raise me up from my grave with my shroud, my kafan, to be my weapon, to be my armor, and for me to be ready to help the imam and to answer the call of the imam. So that should never be a thought, you know, I'm too old. Allah will bring you back in your youth, in your prime, and you'll be ready to help the imam. The ladies will be there as well, so they also will be, you know, having to be ready and equipped to help the imam. None of us have an excuse to say we can't be in the imam's army. From the youngest of the young in this room tonight to the most senior of our members, all of us have a direct role in the time of the imam. And so let me just mention two very brief responsibilities of how do we actually prepare that groundwork to be in this active state. And there are a lot of things. There's a book you can refer to online called The Last Luminary and Ways to Delve into the Light. It contains 80 responsibilities that we have to the imam. You can go to alislam.org and download the book for free. It's available online. And it gives us 80 practical tips that you and I have to the imam. And you know, when you look at the book and you'll read, and if you go over it, you'll see that most of the things in this book are things that you and I already do. Because there are things that we already do, the only thing I ask for us to do is change our intention. So if a chapter says, for example, helping out a fellow believer is a way to help the imam, when you help somebody out, all you do is change your intention. Allah, I'm doing this because I read in this book that it's a way to help in the return of the imam is to help my community. Change your intention and you change why you're doing a certain action. Change the reward, you change your outlook, and you change your role in the movement of the 12th imam. This example of the hadith tells us that if you want to be in the companions of the 12th imam, that you should wait for the imam and perform all of the actions we do with piety, with taqwa. Right? To do all of our actions in the best possible way. Have the best etiquette, have the best form and shape when we do anything. You know how important this is to do everything properly? You know, when we go to work and we're on a contract, we're on a project, we make sure we do everything because we know, you know, one wrong line of code can affect us by millions of dollars maybe. It can make and break a company, for example. And so in our life, we are so meticulous and that's very good. But when it comes to religion as well, we have to be so meticulous to the point where even when Rasulullah was digging a grave, when his son Ibrahim passed away, the Prophet, they didn't have tractors and all this machinery. He was digging the grave with his bare hands, a father, Rasulullah. The Sahaba come to Rasulullah, they say, "Oh Prophet of God, you're digging the grave. What's the big deal? If it's a bit big or, you know, a bit narrow, a bit at an angle, it's a bit of a slope, don't worry about it, it's a grave, who cares?" And he said, "No, that even when a believer does, like digs a grave, they do that in the best possible way. They're meticulous to the to everything that they do in their lives. Digging a grave isn't just, you know, it's something we might not do because we don't live in that society. But the point is that every aspect of our lives, religious or otherwise, whether it's in the center, whether it's at work, it's at school, it's at home, we should never cut corners. And especially when it comes to religion, we should never cut corners and say, well, I can do it cheaper like this, I can do it like that, I can jump through a few loopholes and get things done. No, as the hadith tells us, preparing for the advent means you do every action with taqwa, with knowing that Allah is witness, with knowing that Allah is judging the actions as well as the actor. And so when we look at every act in Islam like that, we realize that everything will be graded and judged by Allah. The simplest of mundane activities, digging a grave, planting a tree, for example, all of these things, if done with the intention and we formulate it in the best possible way, it has an effect. Right? It's not just for that act. It goes on in life that we realize the importance of doing everything with care and in diligence and importance. And so as the hadith says that when we do any action to fulfill this, and that this becomes one of the ways to prepare for the return of our 12th imam. Salu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. And just the second one, and I'll end with this so we go to the quiz for tonight, is these gatherings. As I said, that these majalis we have, they're not a tradition. You know, many times we think that this is just something that our parents brought from back home. They would gather on a waladat, on a shahadat, on a Thursday night. They would get together, nothing else to do back home. So, you know, let's just gather and have something. No, these majalis are actually sanctioned by the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam. We have hadith that tell us, as the hadith on the screen, that encourages us as a community to gather together. And no, we're not opposed to streaming and, you know, having majalis live, because we know many people in our community maybe are sick, they can't come out tonight. They're elderly, they can't leave the house. Or you have young children and you know it's difficult to leave the house with young children. So we're not saying that, you know, you have to be at the center. No, there is a time and a place for the technology, and we have to make use of it, as we do very frequently in this center, which is great that we can have encouragement and we can have participation from many different ways. But we can't deny the fact that, after me saying that, that there is a special barakah, a special blessing that you and I perhaps cannot physically perceive. We can't weigh it, we can't quantify it, but there is a benefit to be in the majlis. Just being together, sitting, it is a experience that is loved by the Ahlul Bayt, that is loved by Allah. This hadith comes to us from our sixth Imam, Imam Ja'far as-Sadiq alayhi salatu wassalam. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. And he asked the companion of his, he says, do you sit and just talk about us, the Ahlul Bayt, about our teachings, about Islam, about the religion of Allah? You have little private gatherings, majalis, you know. Obviously at the time of the Imams, it was not like you and I today. At the time of the Imams, you couldn't have majlis like this. And even today, in many countries in the world, if you go to some countries in the Middle East, and even in other countries in the Far East, it's illegal to have such majalis. You can't gather. Or if you can gather, you have to have a written permission from the government to have a majlis. Why are you gathering? What do you talk about? Who is speaking? How long will they talk? This is a reality for those who have lived in certain countries. You know what I'm talking about. So people have always, as followers of Ahlul Bayt, we've always had to be secretive. How do we talk about our religion? Alhamdulillah, today we don't have that problem. We have live broadcast, and so the world can hear what we're saying. And we're not scared, because we don't say anything contrary to the laws of our country. We don't contradict the laws of the system that we live in. We don't, you know, incite people to violence of other religions. That's not our way, the way of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam. So we're not scared to talk and open. But keep in mind that that's the context, that the Imam was speaking to companions who couldn't have good gatherings like this. So he asked them, do you sit in private, in seclusion, and talk about the Ahlul Bayt, keep our legacy alive, right? Teach other people our teachings? And just to give you, let me just go off on a side note for a minute, as a very brief story, that when I was living in Iran and studying in Qom, I had a neighbor from China, a Chinese Shia Muslim who was a Sayyid. So now figure that out. He's Sayyid, so he comes from the family of Rasul, but he's Chinese, right? He told me when we were speaking together, and I learned Persian so we could talk to one another, because I don't speak Mandarin and he didn't speak English. So I said, how did your family preserve Islam? For 14 centuries, you're Sayyid, how did your family preserve religion when under, especially in the last whatever years, communist China has put such a clamp down on Islam, on religion, but Muslims on a whole? And literally he told me that when his parents, his father wanted to teach him how to pray namaz or how to read Quran, literally he was in a closet. You know, like a little bathroom closet, a little closet where we put our shoes and coats. His father would put him in that closet so the neighbors wouldn't hear what was happening. Because even if your neighbor was a Muslim and they found that you were teaching Islam to your children, which was outside of the government-sponsored religion, you would be gone. You wouldn't be seen the next day. So he told me that our forefathers practiced Islam and Ahlul Bayt by secret, by putting us in little closets, in little rooms, and teaching us about Islam and that when the Ahlul Bayt. Right? When I hear that kind of a story, that somebody had to go through that level of difficulty to preserve their identity, it makes you and I, it makes me happy that we live in a society where we're so open that we can have these gatherings, that we're not afraid to speak about religion. But there are countries today that people live like this, where you can't openly even have a Muslim name. Many countries are banning even Muslim names today. So the sixth Imam says that, do you do this? Do you gather, as the hadith says? And the man says, yes, we gather, we talk about the Ahlul Bayt. We talk about your fadila, we talk about Allah, we speak about the Quran. And the Imam says, I love those gatherings. I wish I could be a part of that majlis, the Imam is saying. Right? So these majalis we have, brothers and sisters, realize that the Imams love these gatherings. And the Imam says, I love the aroma that emanates from you. This is a metaphysical aroma. We can't smell it. But the Imam says, you're giving off a pleasant aroma that is perceived maybe on the Day of Judgment. When we're in our grave and Munkar and Nakir are there to question us, and that squeezing might begin in the grave, maybe this majlis that we sat in, we spent an hour in, that we commuted for half an hour to get to from home, maybe this gathering will be a salvation for us in our grave. We don't know. None of us know what action that we do would be accepted by Allah. But definitely, as the sixth Imam says, he loves these majalis. He wishes to be a part of our gatherings. He encourages us to keep these majalis alive. And this is what we have seen that our communities have done. The elders who came to Canada in the 60s and 70s, they built these centers. They struggled to put this building together. And the least that we can do is to honor their legacy, their challenges, by ensuring that we, as we've done again tonight, that we attend the majalis and that we give the respect to those who have paved the way for us to be able to gather in these majalis as we do and as we have done this evening on the birth of our 12th Imam. Salu ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. Let me end there now and go to the fun part of the program, because I know I've been talking for 32 minutes and 33 seconds. So let's go to the fun part. So if you have your phones available or your tablets and you've connected to the Wi-Fi, we'll have the code on the screen shortly for the quiz. There's the Wi-Fi information. If you don't have a data plan, if you have data, you can use that, because the Wi-Fi might slow you down a bit. And once that is logged in, we can give the code to the community. Which is the last slide on the presentation. So if you want to punch that code into your app, either if you have the app or if you have the website open, and hopefully if the technology works, that the quiz should start. No? Okay. Let's give the AV team a second to figure it out. Oh, so we may have a different PIN code, I think. We can look at the PIN code on the screen. 254-4291 for those who want to enter it. And you can enter your nickname, make sure you keep it clean, nothing bad. And when you're ready, you'll see your name pops up on the screen. And we'll have, I think, 7 questions. Again, there's no prizes today except for the tabarukat at the end. But that hopefully will encourage you to think about the questions, and they're pretty simple. We'll give it about maybe another 20 or 30 seconds to make sure everybody's logged in. If you don't have a device, maybe sit beside somebody who has something if you want to participate. And I promise I won't answer the questions so I don't get the right answers, but I'll just keep myself logged in to keep aware of what's happening. And if we have everybody logged in, we can start. No? You're not ready yet? Okay, one more second. We'll give you 10 seconds to log in.